Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I will be talking more about cover and undercover. I will be explaining more about how we come to decide and then demonstrate who we are and who we are not, and why that isn't always the truth. Why we are sometimes demonstrating something we are, hiding something we are, pretending to be something we're not. I will also be talking at the end of the show about brain chemistry and how the neurons that fire in our brain learn the responses that we need to make and then confirm and continue to keep in place those cover stories, those ideas of who we think it is safe to be and who we don't think it's safe to be. Also, I'll be playing an interview I did with Lindsay Marie Tierce, who is a graduating student at the FSU Actor Training Program at the Oslo Repertory Theater in Sarasota, Florida. Lindsay being the sixth of the six graduating students whose interviews I've been playing. Well, it's a full show, so hang on. Here it comes.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice. Gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about knowing thyself. It's a very old premise, but it never goes out of date. It never goes out of style. It never becomes less important. Of course, as a psychotherapist, I spend my professional life attempting to help people do just that, know themselves. Maybe that's not why people come into therapy. Maybe that's not anything that anyone ever thinks is what they should be doing. People come into therapy mostly saying, boy, I keep doing this thing, I don't want to do it anymore. Or, there's this thing I want to do and I don't seem to be able to do it. And fix me, you know, help me to be able to do this thing I can't do, or to stop doing this thing I keep doing that I hate. But in the end, what helps that to happen is the knowing of the self. Inevitably, the thing that the person wants to be or to have or to learn or to create is actually already there, but hidden. And it is the work of therapy quite often to help the person recognize that it is already there. And that the challenge is not to somehow find it or create it or develop it or, you know, work at it or whatever, but to allow it, to accept it. And then, of course, why would that be a problem unless there was some taboo, some obstacle to knowing it, being it, recognizing it, using it? So that's really the theme of the Lynn Show, that you and I and everyone listening are probably keeping secrets about ourselves from ourselves. That there are things about us, ways in which we could be that we are not. And it's my hope that in listening to this show, even just my talking about it, even just my saying, listen, have you thought about this? Is there something that you want to do and you think you need some skill, but you don't have it? I'm going to talk more about this in a little bit, but if you've been listening to the show, you know, and if you haven't been listening to the show, I will tell you that the other thing I do, beside talking about this, is in my way of demonstrating this. And I do this by interviewing people who make their living or their life with an art. I do that because it's so difficult to be an artist in our culture, and this is any kind of artist. We are not encouraging or supportive of artists in this culture. We, you know, parents will say, oh, look, she's a wonderful painter. Look at that draw. Look how she can draw, dance, sing, act, mimic. You know, oh, it's so cute. It's so, oh, he's so talented. Yes, it's so lovely. But then when it comes time for them to make a living, they don't, quite often don't want that for their child. And, you know, they're not that wrong. The culture itself does not really support it. So I interview these people because in order to make a living or a life with an art, it has to be who you really are. It has to be what you really are, because no one can endure it otherwise. And the interview that I'm playing today is with Lindsay Marie Tierce. She's one of the students who's graduating from Florida State University acting program. If you've been listening, last month I played interviews with five of the graduating students. There are nine, and Lindsay is the last one that I am going to be playing. Last month, I also played an interview with their first-year acting teacher, Andre Malay of Babo, and following my interview with Lindsay, I'm playing an interview with Greg Lemming, who runs the program. But one of the reasons I want to talk about Lindsay right now is because at the very end of the interview, she talks about how her teachers saw in her something which even she had not seen in herself. And they cast her in a role. You'll hear her talk about this. I'm not going to tell any more about it. But they cast her in a role that allowed her to be what she really is, although she had not really accepted it, known it herself. And so this is my idea of the way things should be. That there are things in us. Lindsay, of course, incredibly fortunate and very brave, because she put herself in a place where she could find that. You know, I said earlier that that's what I do with people who come to me in therapy, is I am trying to help them find who they really are, so that they're not at odds with it, so that they're not trying to be something they're not, so that they're not yearning for something they already have, so that they can be, we call it, congruent. You know, what you see is what you get, that they're in sync, that they're not, you know, when you're not being yourself, whatever it is you're trying to be is harder than it needs to be. So, in this interview, and towards the end, as I said, you can hear Lindsay talking about the person she always thought she was, the performer she always thought she was, the roles she always thought she was going to get, the way she was always cast, and how her teachers saw this in her, nurtured it in her, allowed her to begin to consider it, and then gave her a role in which she really could make it happen. This is a perfect example of what it is that I'm trying to accomplish with the Lynn Show. The ability, and actually Lindsay even talks about it in the beginning of the interview, where she talks about having seen West Side Story and the impact that it had on her, what it told her about herself. So, are you thinking about what there might be in you? Is there a more assertive person in you than you have let on? When you're sitting quietly, letting other people do all the talking, or letting people run roughshod over you, or accepting unacceptable behavior that feels bad, or not standing up for yourself in situations where you're not actually being treated badly, but there's something you want? Is there someone inside of you saying, say something, do something? That person is there already. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe you feel compelled to be the life of the party, to interject when there's silence, to make peace when other people are fighting, to take charge, to be in control. Maybe there's a quieter person inside of you, a person who doesn't feel threatened when things have gotten out of hand, when other people are in conflict, when there's silence. Maybe there's a person who can sit back and observe, who doesn't need to be in control. Do you know? Are you one or the other of these? Are you yearning for the peace of the opposite? The peace of being able to stand up for yourself, or the peace of being able to sit back and let things evolve? Do you believe me that that person is already inside of you? I really believe it. So, why would there be a person inside of you that you would not be using? Why would the assertive person, the person who could say, oh, wait a minute, that I don't like that, don't do that, or, no, that's mine, I want that. Why, if there's a person inside of you that's yearning to be still, to be at peace, to let other people solve their own problems, to trust that things will work out okay, to wait to see if things don't work out okay, why wouldn't you use that person? if that person is really there? Well, I'm a therapist. You're going to hear what you would expect from a therapist. Somehow in your childhood, you got the idea that that quality, the ability to stand up for yourself, or the ability to trust that things will be okay even if you don't have your hand in it, somehow you got the idea that that quality was ugly or even dangerous. It's my belief that you not only have that quality, but that you demonstrated that quality sometime in your childhood. You did stand up for yourself. You did say, ouch, no, don't, stop. I don't like that. I want that, not that. And you got a response that taught you in no uncertain terms that that behavior was not going to bring you something you wanted. Or the other way around. The circumstance in which you found yourself was so out of control, so chaotic, so dangerous maybe even, that you felt compelled to get in there and fix it, do something, take over as much as you could as a child. And learned, of course, at the same time, that standing by and letting things simply evolve might very well cause circumstances or consequences that you really didn't want to have. So you learn to put your ability to trust, your ability to wait, your ability to allow things to evolve undercover. That's the word I use for it, undercover. And you created a cover story that said, I take charge, I fix, I'm proactive. Or, you know, the other way around, you put your ability to take charge, your ability to be proactive, undercover, and created a kind of passive cover story. I'm timid, I'm shy, I'm not aggressive, I trust, or I shut down. So, of course, there we have the reasons. Somehow, early in your life, you learned that this behavior, this capacity, this attribute was unfortunate, problematic, maybe even, as I said earlier, dangerous. And you learned to hide it. You hid it so well, so completely, that you hid it from yourself. So that even as I'm speaking, if you are a quiet, shy, timid, passive person who allows other people to behave either, you know, inappropriately with you, or who wants things but is afraid to ask for them, or you're a go-getter, hard-driving, take-control kind of person who's actually burning out a little bit, or whose relationships are all adversarial, and you can even begin to wonder if the opposite is undercover, and if you can find a way to uncover it. And maybe a therapist would help, or maybe an acting teacher like Lindsay Marie, or maybe you can do at least some of it for yourself. If you've even had a hint, a spark, a tingle that this other person is inside, how you can begin to work on it, that is, begin to create an environment for yourself in which you can get access to it, is first by noticing it. If you're sitting there, shutting down, allowing someone to take something that you want, or to say something to you that's unpleasant that you don't like, or maybe you know you deserve a raise at work and you're not getting it, or something like that. If you feel even the slightest tingle of regret that you are that way, or the hint that you might like to be another way, simply acknowledge it. Just notice it And please, more important than anything, don't criticize it. Don't yell at yourself. Don't judge yourself. Don't say, oh, there it is again. I'm such a wimp. When am I going to be different? No, 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 no. Just notice it. It is the noticing, what I call awareness, that will begin to create the environment in which it changes. Non-judgmental awareness. And of course, this is equally true for the go-getter. So while you're in there taking charge, telling people what to do, worrying about the way things are going, even being assertive, aggressive, or even unpleasant, notice it. Oh, here I am doing that thing. Not critical, not judgmental, just notice it. If you can really notice it, really notice it, every time, you are beginning to change it. You are beginning to change the brain chemistry that drops a particular chemical in your bloodstream that continues to perpetuate this behavior. After I play Lindsay Marie's interview, I'll say a little bit more about brain chemistry, a little bit more about blood in the bloodstream that is keeping your cover story in place and making it difficult for you to uncover your undercover. But right now, I'm going to, as I said, I'm going to play the interview with Lindsay Marie Tierce. And you can hear in this interview just what I've been talking about. The evolution of a girl who thought she was one thing into a woman who came to know what she really is. So, here, in her own words, Lindsay Marie Tierce. Okay, so I'm here with Lindsay Marie Tierce in a conference room in the Oslo. And Lindsay's about to graduate from the Oslo Conservatory 3-year acting program.
That's right.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And it's clear that anyone who's gone through this program is trying to make a life with the art of theater.
Definitely.
Specifically as an actor, or maybe an actor, maybe other things?
Yeah, I think as an artist, especially, I mean, it's the theater that no matter where you end up, you're going to be a creative person. I think that that's something that this program teaches you, is that we had an alumni come talk to us, and he's now the vice president of Sony Pictures and Television. His name's Chris Parnell. And so the idea that even though he's not an actor anymore, the things that he does is still creative. So I think for me personally, I'm looking into possibly teaching theater, something I got the chance to do this year with another one of my classmates at Manatee School for the Arts in Palmetto. And I really enjoyed that and really enjoyed the idea of, because that's kind of high school is when I sort of fell into theater, fell in love with it. And so to be sort of facilitator for the next generation of artists, I think is really important. And I know it made a big change in my life. So.
Well, hold on, because that's the question.
Yeah.
The question I always ask is the same one.
Mm-hmm.
How did it happen? But don't start at high school. Tell me the very first time it occurred to you, or you thought, or what the genesis was, or how it started, or any of that, the very first time it occurred to you that this might be a path for you.
Well, I think it was, the poetic story is the production I saw of West Side Story. I saw it live at a high school. It wasn't my high school, but I knew people in it through friends.
So you were in high school when that happened?
I was,
so
as a freshman.
So there's nothing previous to that? There's no
I mean,
dancing
I did,
for your parents?
Okay,
or
well, okay, so I guess going further back, when I was probably, 7 or 8 or 9 with my cousins, we'd put on little shows. I specifically remember a 4th of July show we did where we used flashlights as the fireworks or something. Mm-hmm. And it was, I don't even remember what it was about, but
but
I remember
you
that.
Remember
yeah.
that
that it was dramatic and it was creative and it stayed with you.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess so, yeah. And I don't know what made us want to do that or
so
what.
So you don't remember the genesis of that at all? Not like, let's put on a play or...
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, I did, like, in third and fourth grade at my elementary school, I did little, like, you know, shows or whatever, you know, so we had little choir-type things.
Did you sing?
I did, a little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember the last year, I think it was a fourth grade, I had, like, a solo and I was so nervous. You know, this little, you know, 9-year-old kid up there going, ew. So, but...
But did you like it?
I did. I liked the people, and I liked after school going to rehearsal, mm-hmm. you know, even as an 8-year-old. I thought that was pretty fun. And I remember really looking up to the people older than me, you know, the mm-hmm. the junior hires or whatever, mm-hmm. I guess they were, but they seemed so much older. But
and
yeah.
And so with a certain kind of admiration or, they were cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. They were very well-spoken and confident and outgoing and mm-hmm. friendly. And mm-hmm. I was always kind of, yeah, I was. And even when I saw that West Side Story production, that was my freshman year of high school, I just thought that those leads were just phenomenal. I was just like wowed by them. And I remember after seeing that production, I actually transferred to that school.
Because of it?
Because of that play.
Wow.
And that's, I said, I want to do theater, and I want to do it at that school.
You said that to your parents?
Yeah.
And what did they say?
They said, okay. And I mean, I had been at a private Christian school for much of my life, and so the idea of going to public school
was
kind of...
Leap.
Yeah, it was kind of scary for them. They're like, high school? And I was like, Mom, I had some friends going with me as well, and...
It's safe, like, I'll be okay.
Yeah, right? Yeah, and I was like, I have people there, and I, you know, pilgrimaged to that school to do theater with them, because I had done, and then going back a little bit again, is I had done piano, mm-hmm. so I had taken piano, so an understanding of music sort of paved the way, and then also I did dance as well.
Oh, yeah, so there's a lot of that before.
Yeah.
There's a lot leading up. When you say you did dance, does that mean you took lessons?
Or yeah,
went to dance school? Or?
Right. I mean, at a point, I was doing 3 days a week, like, all different things, jazz, ballet, and then, like, a musical theater, dance, and then, like, lyrical. Like, so I was doing a bunch of stuff for a while.
Yeah, well, yeah. There was a lot of stuff leading up to that freshman experience of West Side Story.
Yeah, definitely.
It was all over the map, right?
Yeah, right. And then it all kind of culminated in this,
the light bulb, right, mm-hmm. right.
So, and then, yeah, and then my first year there at the high school that I went to seek the arts, it was Temescal Canyon High School in Lake Elsinore, California, and my first year I did Music Man. Ah. I was just in the ensemble, and I was a dancer, like a featured dancer or whatever, but then,
You remember it?
Yeah. Oh so well. And I still have friends from then. Like, those people are still, like, some of them are in Long Beach and some of them are, they're all over the place. But it was finally a place and the people where I could just be myself. And because there was a lot, in junior high, there was a lot of, like, should I say this? Will I be seen as not cool or whatever? And I found that when I met the theater kids that it was just, like, that didn't really matter anymore. And it was all about being free and being creative, and
it was kind of a home.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
This is where I belong.
Yeah, and it was like, I had friends, you know, who were sort of like, when I came over from the other school, who were sort of cheerleaders and things like that, and I kind of slowly kind of drifted into the hanging out with the theater kids all the mm-hmm. time, and they were like, why are you hanging out with them? And I was just like, because they don't judge me. They don't, you know, make me feel like I can't be myself, and I really appreciate that.
Did you actually say that to the to the cheerleader kids?
Yeah.
So what did they say?
They were just like, okay, whatever. I don't know. Like, I don't remember. I think a couple of them were pretty upset because I'd been friends with them for a while, but I was just like, this is where I feel like I belong. This is, I'd rather be around these people. And, you know, subsequently, those other kids that I used to hang out with got into trouble and all kinds of stuff, and, for some reason, the theater kids were the pure ones.
It is so interesting because, unless I have the chronology wrong, the cheerleader kids mm-hmm. are going to that Christian school.
They were. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And then they went crazy when they went to public school. Exactly.
Right. How interesting.
And I was the one who kind of just, and I wanted to do something. And
yeah. Yeah, and you found a reason, you
and
found a mission.
A safe place.
Right.
It was.
Right. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so... High school starts mm-hmm. out with Music Man, then what happens?
We did, and then the next fall of my junior year, we did our first straight play.
which I think is when I sort of learned the most at once, like, in a long, in, you know, that was a big milestone. We did the Children's Hour, Lillian Hellman. A very weird play to do in high school.
No kidding.
It is so, a weird, yeah, and I mean, there's, like, homosexual undertones, right. And there's, you know, suicide at the end, and I played the character who committed suicide and what everything. So it was this crazy sort
it's
of immersion.
A very, imagine... What is the word I
controversial
want?
Controversial?
Well, yeah, definitely controversial, and especially when you did it. But I'm thinking that it draws on some feelings that you might not have been expected to, you know, experience in your own life yet.
Definitely, yeah. And there was, you know, I had friends, you know, how can you, you know, the old friends, how can you do this play? It's about, you know, this lesbian or whatever. And I was like, well, I think that, and it came to the, this is a story that needs to be told, I think. And so that was that first sort of... feeling of that, of this is a story that needs to be told, the idea of lies and how they destroy people, and I think it, especially for high school, it's a great theme.
I agree, and so. Interesting that's what you did with it. You could have gone with, well, it's a role, you know, it's no big deal, I learn a role, but you didn't.
Yeah.
You went with this other thing, which I suspect says something about you.
Yeah. Maybe it does. I think it does.
Yeah, it must.
I really thought about that. But yeah.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. And
that what I do with my life makes a difference, that I make a statement that's not just, it's not just an acting role and I get, because there were a lot of ways to go with that. You could have gone, this gives me an opportunity to learn more. But you didn't. I mean, at least that's not what you're saying now. So
no,
I'm quite sure that that's, right, okay, never mind, I won't. This anymore.
No, it's true, and it was a way for me to justify it for myself, for other people, for, you know, and I learned the most, because it was a, you know, kind of, it's kind of these two main women in their relationship and their, you know, experience, and so I had a lot of time with the drama teacher that I had in high school, who's very, he came to my wedding, Mr. Carlin, he's the best, so he was very, a very big mentor in my theater, you know,
development.
And so doing that play, and then that spring we did Singing in the Rain, and I played Lena Lamont in that, and then the next fall we did this other play, And They Dance Real Slow in Jackson, I played the mother in that, and then that was my senior year, and then we did Guys and Dolls, and I played Miss Adelaide, and
Oh my God!
So once I got into it, it was just like I did every show that
and
came
they're
away.
So different.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, the difference between... Well, any two of them, really.
Yeah.
And you got quite an education.
Yeah, I did. And I mean, and also, I remember my senior year, we did, like I said, Annie Jones, Sloan Jackson, Guys and Dolls. And then in the middle of the year, they did a community production through our high school of West Side Story. So I came full circle, and now this time I got to be in the production on that same stage
that I saw
West Side Story at before. And it was very cool. Of course, women, there's not, for white women, there's not that many roles in that show. But I got to play one of the ones with lines, you know. I think it was Ice's girlfriend, Velma, or something. But it was a lot of fun, and the hardest I had ever danced in my life, because, man, that was intense. But, yeah, and then went on in junior college. I had a brief moment of, should I, you know, we all have that moment of, as an artist, should I have a backup plan? You know, the backup plan. And for a while, I was going to do a production of Miracle Worker, and I was like, oh, I should take a sign language class. That would be really cool. Maybe it would give me prep if I were cast as, you know, Annie Sullivan or whatever. I was actually cast as the aunt, but because I'm often cast as older people than I am. So I took the sign language class, and I really fell in love with the language. And I actually went to Cal State Northridge with the intent of double majoring in theater and in deaf studies, and to be an interpreter. And it got to a point in undergrad where I had to choose. It was just like too much to do both at once, and I realized just I had to follow my heart, and my heart was with the theater, because I was like, well, if I ask myself, who do I want to go hang out with? Do I want to go hang out with the deaf kids and like talk to them and hang out with them, become friends with them? I could do that. Or do I want to go hang out with the theater kids?
And it was a no-brainer.
Yeah, exactly. And so I dropped the deaf studies major and finished out with theater. And then heard about auditions for grad schools and was kind of like, well, I do have a general theater degree, BA, and not a BFA. And so I didn't really get... I got kind of general theater training. I had an acting class. I had a directing class. I did lots of tech. But I wanted acting technique. I wanted to go for acting. And so I heard about grad school auditions through URTA, U-R-T-A. And I auditioned, and here I am, 3 years later. I mean,
wow. So, and your parents, they just went on this ride with you?
They did, and they've always been very supportive. I think they saw how happy I was, especially in high school, because obviously I was living at home. And they came to every play. They were always there. Very, very supportive. They were never, I mean, I think there was a moment of, you know, like we all have, like I said, of the, you know, what's the backup plan? What are you thinking? And I think it was, especially once I got into grad school here, that they were like, no, you clearly need to do this. Like, this is...
It's for real.
Yeah, this is, you know, and that was kind of why I auditioned, is I was kind of like, well, let's see what other people think. Let's see if they think I should be doing this. And the answer was that they did think I should be doing this, they being the royal they.
Right.
the world, the cosmos. But then by the end of the program, I would say I've sort of figured out for myself that I believe I should be doing this, which was the nice thing of becoming confident.
Yeah.
Like those kids in that play when I was in third grade who I looked up to. So.
Yes, yeah. You've made it.
Yeah. Junior high.
Yay.
Junior high confidence.
Right.
Well, that's definitely something. But.
So, I just want to talk a little bit about Las Meninas.
Yeah, please.
What an amazing performance. Oh, my God.
Oh, thank you.
Really. And not an easy role.
No, it's quite an arc.
Woo!
Yeah, it's quite an arc. And I remember we kind of got hints of the possibility that they might be doing this play December of last year, before the season was announced. I got a script, and they kind of said, we'd like to have you audition for this part. And it's you know, a sizable role. And
a sizable role?
Yeah.
You're on stage the entire time.
Right? And I had my second year in the conservatory. I hadn't really had that sort of... I mean, I don't think... I would say Mockinall last year was the closest that any of us had to that sort of experience, where literally Kim was on stage for every scene.
Right.
And so I was kind of like, okay, but they really wanted to see the Spanish dialect. They really wanted to see what I could do with it. So I, you know, took my own time, and I, in the midst of doing, probably rehearsing Mockinall, learning the dialect, and I kind of cut a little monologue from the show. I think it's the one in Act 1 where I'm talking to the painter. He came in a box, and how can he not be mine, and this whole thing. So I think I kind of cut that to a little monologue, and then it was sort of, you know, quiet for a while of like, okay, thank you for showing us that. And then I didn't find out until May that I'd gotten the role.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I mean, reading the whole play, I was just so moved by it. And I felt, once I, you know, got it, I felt so lucky that not only, you know, is the show head up by 3 students, and that was kind of a first in, I mean, the 3 years that I've been here, I've never really seen that
before.
No, it's
remarkable.
And
all the major roles are students.
Yeah, and the play is so wonderfully written. I mean, Pulitzer Prize winning, you know, playwright, and it's just...
And maybe a story that needs to be told.
Yeah, and it was intriguing, and it was sad, and funny at the same, you know, there's so much humor in it as well. And I just really credit Lynn Nottage for the three-dimensionality of all the characters, because I think that she, the queen especially, she's very contradictory. She's very hypocritical.
She's all over the place.
And I think that that's delicious.
Yes.
Because she's sexy, but she's childish, you know, and she's loud and boisterous, but she's also very timid at times, especially, you know, feeling out of place.
Right.
And so there's a lot of fun kind of pulls, you know.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we seem to be more comfortable with unidimensional descriptions of ourselves and others.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
But it isn't really true.
Yeah,
we're not, any of us.
We're afraid of people going, well, that doesn't make sense.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And I think, and especially a playwright who is crafting something, people can be like, that doesn't make
sense. Right.
But she's just like, forget it. Here it is.
Right.
Because deal with it.
Because it's the truth.
Yeah.
It's the truth. We definitely are more than most of us let on.
Yeah. And I really related to that, because I feel a lot of those qualities of you know, being timid, but being outgoing, and, you know what I mean?
We all do.
It's a human thing.
I do,
and I
really think that what you were describing, I mean, sort of your journey is kind of like that, going, yeah. You know, sort of being drawn to and admiring and, wanting to emulate those outgoing junior high school students, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
From a position of not being those yeah. things yet.
Yeah.
And then really, it seemingly, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but seemingly, it took the entire trip through these 3 years for you to finally say, I can be that too. That's me. Me too, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And starting even first year, but mostly second year, as they were prepping us, they would say to me, you know, you're a leading lady. And I had been playing mothers. I always play the mother. And that's, even in high school, I played the mother mm-hmm. and in older women. And I think it was just, they were saying, you know, you have a mature energy, especially on stage. You are very grounded. And I was like, is that curvy? Is that why? But they were like, no, it's not even just that. It's just something about you is older than your years. And so I always played the mother. So I kind of always thought, well, I'm the Witta Peru in Music Man, or I'm the, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then here they were kind of like, no, you're a Kate in Taming of the Shrew. You're a, you know, you're all of these things. And then I got to play this role. And it's, I think it's the closest to me that in a lot of ways that I've ever played on stage, you know.
Oh, this is so lovely. The sort of, the fact that other people could see in you what you were reluctant to allow yeah. yourself to accept.
Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely.
Right? And the statement of how good they are, the teachers, mm-hmm. that they could draw that out of you yeah. in a way that wasn't threatening or scary, but encouraging, and then they could definitely. Give you this role, which was really remarkable. I mean, it's an amazing role, and you were amazing in it.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
So what are you thinking about now? Do you know? Do you have plans?
Well, you know, we have our little showcase thing. So mm-hmm. we did our little showcase thing. And I'm from California, mm-hmm. born and raised. And that's home. And I am thinking L.A. I've kind of got a possible teaching opportunity that's in the balance. I neglect to say more just because it's so early on right now. Mm-hmm. But that's a possibility. Or going to L.A. And I know Devereaux, who plays Louise Therese, mm-hmm. Her and I actually went to undergrad together in Cal State Northridge. And we both got in. We were, you know, same year. We both auditioned together, and we both got in here together. So we've kind of had this little connection journey. And she's going back to L.A. as well. And so we're kind of thinking, we'll go back there and do a little bit of everything. I would like to try TV and commercial and do what stage, you know, which stage is there. And because, yeah, going to New York, I was sort of like, I don't know. I've never really been to this city. I don't really know this city. There's so many actors here already, and I've heard the jobs are really skim. It's just not somewhere I feel like I need to be. I don't know. You know, and if I was trying to open myself to that when I went there and be like, let me fall in love with you, New York, if this is what's meant to be, but it didn't really happen, and I kind of knew that.
Well, there's
my intuition was right.
There's lots of theater in L.A. The entire range of theater. You know, I mean, there's five-seat theaters.
Yeah,
right. There's everything.
Definitely, and I think, and Devereaux and I always have a strong feeling of if people keep, you know, perpetuating the idea that theater in L.A. is non-existent, then it will become so. And so you have to have people who believe that it can move forward to push it forward. And I think we want to be those people. And we have another friend of ours who went to a grad school at Kansas City, Missouri. And she's coming back as well. And we all went to undergrad together, and
you're thinking of a little troupe.
Yeah, I mean, well, the girl from Kansas City is Latina, and Devereaux is obviously a black girl, and I am the curvy one, so we're like the three lady minorities or something, theater group, or I don't know. So it'll be interesting, it'll be fun. So we'll see, and there's lots of Oslo people who come that way as well, and there's a really great alumni network.
In L.A.?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean,
also some in San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco, L.A., I mean, and I know kids in the program who are in years behind me who are thinking of coming to L.A. as well, and I know people who are already out there.
So there's a community.
Yeah, there's nowhere where you go, there's a network
from this theater specifically. Like I said, the alumni who's the head of Sony Pictures and Television.
Yeah.
You know what I
LA.
Mean? LA. So, and he's doing very well. So, never know. Never know.
So, I always ask this question, it's a little premature
okay.
for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
But you can answer it both with your experience to date
mm-hmm.
and also what you project, what you imagine, right?
Okay.
The question is, what do you think about giving a life, living a life that's dedicated to an art? So just think about it, and if anything occurs to you, let me know.
Well, I look forward to some kind of, I mean, the dream for me is never, people always say, oh, you know, oh, you're an actor, are you going to Broadway? And you know, that's the thing that they always say to you, you know. It's like when you say you're getting married, you know, the question is, how did you propose? It's
the same equivalent.
You know. And so to that I always say, I would just like to be able to support myself with my art. That's, I think, that's my humble aspiration, and even that is, you know, pushing it. But I think that I came to a point where I had a choice, and I made the choice, and now there really isn't a decision anymore. So this is my life. This is the way that I'm going. And even if I teach next year for a year, I still feel that is living your art in a lot of ways, because, like I said, giving to the next generation of artists. And it was so important for me, and my Mr. Carlin, you know, was such a big part of my growth, that if I can be even a fraction of that for someone else, then it's extremely fulfilling. And and the idea of, you were, like you said, all the things aligned. You know, the piano, dance, the music, seeing this production, everything aligned for a reason, and it's like a funnel. Like, you have little flashes in the pan, and then it kind of, all of a sudden, you're on this path. And I think to, all of a sudden, shy away from that would be so wrong. And, I don't know. I think I'm destined in some ways.
You know, it's really interesting that the idea that the decision has been made,
mm-hmm.
so now all you have to do is stick to it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that sticking to this particular decision is always that easy.
Yeah.
But you don't have to second guess it, and you don't have to wonder, and you don't have to, right? Is that what
definitely.
You mean?
Well, I mean, and you know, there's going to be times of doubt. There already has been. You know what I mean? There always will be. But knowing that, I always say, you know, if you can be happier doing anything else, by all means, do it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like, I don't, for a while, like, I had close call with the deaf studies, with
mm-hmm.
the interpreting, but that came to a point where I was like, no, I wouldn't even be happy doing that, and that's like my second choice, and even
and
one wrong down
right,
is
pales.
Not good.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
it definitely
right.
pales in comparison, just the people, the environment, the creativity, and especially after everything I've learned here, it's like it's propelled me forward. I think maybe I would have, that's why I'm so glad I came here, is just because I think, you know, you get stale after a while, especially not having the training that I had here, where I can really reinvent myself and continue to find new things in plays and work on myself, you know, which is the tools they give you. Not only do you do the work on yourself here, but they give you the tools to continue to do that for the rest of your life, which is great. And I think without that, I maybe would have had issues, so I'm really glad that
yeah, but
that
you
I
made the choice. You
yeah.
made the choice to reach out for it, right?
Yeah.
You said, right.
I said, yeah, what do you think? Teach me.
Give me
something. When they say, when the inspiration isn't there, how do you give a performance? You know, how do you do the same caliber as you did last night when you were full of inspiration? You know, and some days you go and we have this thing where we say, you know, ask your inner artist how they feel about performing tonight. And you just kind of talk, you know, you talk to yourself and you say, you know, how do you feel? Are you wanting to do this? And sometimes you say, I'm kind of tired,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm kind of tired today. And I'm just not as open today as I should be, you know. And then so what do you do in that situation? I like to latch on to one thing. Tonight I'm going to try to make King Louis love me.
Mm-hmm. Tonight, that's what I'm going to try to do. And so everything is for him. Or tonight, I'm going to, yeah, find someone that I can hold on to. And so that will keep me, yeah. You know, so finding those new little things that you can decide on every night to make it different and important and potent. Yeah.
It's lovely. It's yeah. lovely to listen to you. I wish you all of the best. Truly, you have a remarkable talent, and
thank you.
I hope that it finds its way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Thank you.
Thank you
I
very
hope so too.
Much, Lindsay.
Thank you.
And I meant that, not only for Lindsay, but for all of the students who I interviewed. I was lucky enough to see them all in performance over the last years, as I live in Sarasota, where the training program is. And also, ironically, to be in New York when they did the showcase, which they do as graduating students for directors, managers, agents. And I got to see the pieces that they chose to present. And they were all remarkable. They were all remarkable. It's a tribute to the taste, it's not exactly the right word, of the who chooses them, you know, that they're so well chosen and so well trained. And I do wish not only Lindsay but all of them the best of luck. If you listen to any of these interviews, you heard from each and every one of them how dedicated, how diligent, how hardworking, because a lot of what they said was about how difficult it was, how painful to have to have everything that you thought you knew broken down and then rebuilt. But they all stayed, and they all grew, and tribute to them and to their teachers. And as I said, next week, I'm rebroadcasting an interview I did with Greg Lemming, who runs the program, is the artistic director of the conservatory program, and also the assistant artistic director of the Oslo Repertory Theater. And you will hear in that interview the dedication and intelligence and philosophical position and skill that Greg brings to it, and you will see it if you ever get lucky enough to see any of these people on stage. I did intend to say a little bit about brain chemistry, as I was talking at the beginning of the show about our cover story and how we learned what it was that we had to do and what we had better not do. And what we had better do, the person we had better demonstrate, I have labeled our cover story. And by the way, that information is all in my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And I realize now as I'm saying this that I didn't tell you, you can get that information about the book, podcasts of all the shows, any information you want about me and what I do, and also access to me, because you can email me at my website, which is thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow, thelynnshow.com. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. And so I'm just going to say a little bit about it because I'm running out of time, which is not uncommon. When we learn something, one of the things it means, what it means when I say we learned something, is that our brain has put together some kind of stimulus with a response. It has matched that response to what it has seen. So, as I was saying in the beginning, if you had some kind of assertive response as a small child, you had a temper tantrum, or you insisted on wearing the blue shorts and not the pink shorts, or you didn't want to eat your potatoes, or whatever it was, and you got a real response to that was really unpleasant. You either didn't get your way at all, or you got criticized, or embarrassed, or punished, or abused even. Your brain has put that together. The impulse to stand up for yourself and the expected response. And in order to protect you from the expected response, it drops a chemical in your bloodstream that says, whoa, and it inhibits the response. So that you stop responding with assertiveness. And over time, as this happens more and more and more and over again, you come to think of yourself as someone who doesn't have that response. But in actual fact, what's happening is that your brain is dropping a chemical in your bloodstream that stops, inhibits the response. Your capacity to respond that way has not gone away. But your brain is telling you not to do it. Okay, so I just want to remind you that if this has stimulated anything in you, if this has triggered anything in you, be alert. Simply be aware, non-judgmental awareness, that you are having a response that is contradictory, opposite, different from the one you might want to have. And you can get more information about this not only from the book, but from previous shows where I talk at length about this, and future shows where I intend to talk about it again. But now I have to thank the remarkable Josh Hackney, who makes this show as good as it is, all eras up to me. And if you want Josh, you go to my website and say, I want Josh, and I'll get him for you. And so, as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that triggered some idea for you. Something that told you something you didn't know. Something that stimulated you. Something that will bring you back. Because I will be back next week, same time, same station, with Greg Lemming. And boy, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang, so you won't hear.